Indeed, it is second hour, DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, here with you, Hillside Medical Game Studios. A couple days ago, you heard the announcement, 94.9 The Fan, June 13th, just around the corner, 10 days away. We had Jonathan Hutton on yesterday from Outkick 360 to talk about it. We'll also talk a little Titans with him. We had Dan Patrick on, who will be a part of the lineup as well from 8 until 11 a.m., and our good buddy John McClain in Houston, who was a part of Outkick 360 and has been a part of us over the years, and we're excited to have him a part of the family beginning June 13th, and he now joins us. John, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. It's always fun to be able to come on and talk hockey with two hockey experts. You guys, I bet you don't know, I made 16 trips to Edmonton and Calgary in my two seasons of covering the Houston Aeros in 1976 and 77. And so I've always been an Oilers fan. I covered Wayne Gretzky's brief career with the Indianapolis Racers before he went to Edmonton. And I've always had a soft spot for Edmonton, and I think it's great that the country gets to see Connor McDavid, but man, oh man, the Avs have just embarrassed him. I went to Quebec City in the Nordiques. I went to the old Le Colisée, which was a dump. It's like Calgary was the Cowboys. They played in a Stampede crowd, which always smelled like horse, you know what, because they had the second biggest rodeo there in North America, other than Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. And so I had a blast covering Gordie Howe and his sons, Mark and Marty Howe, in my brief time of covering the hockey before I moved over. And I love the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I always tell people, the Stanley Cup playoffs, by and large, are so much more exciting and interesting than the NBA. It drives people crazy when I say this on my shows in Houston, but it's a fact. As Casey Stengel used to say, you can look it up, and nobody knows that better than Willie Donick, Darren McFarland. It's great to hear you guys again. And it's great to be on with you, and I'm really looking forward to Outkick 360 being back in Nashville, us being back in Nashville on 94.9 The Fan.
Willie, this is where I'm going to brag on John, because you know this. We've come across some great storytellers over the years. Terry Crisp is one of them, and this guy is for sure one of them. Those two right there are on the Mount Rushmore of storytellers. And what makes a great storyteller is the fact that you can talk to them for years, maybe even decades, and you still get a new story. Like, I don't remember John ever telling us that. Do you remember John talking about covering?
Not in that
Edmonton account,
no.
Right?
No.
I don't remember. It's not like we never talked hockey with you. I don't remember you ever telling us that you covered hockey in the 70s. Now, maybe my memory sucks, and it does, and I forgot.
I left Waco Tribune Herald to come to the Chronicle. I'd never seen a hockey game, didn't know squat about it. And, of course, there was no internet to look it up. So I rushed to the Waco Public Library, looked up Gordie Howe, and read some articles in, like, Life magazine and Sports Illustrated. Second day I was here, I had to cover a hockey game, and they're flying up and down the ice, and I had no clue what they were doing. And a week later, a guy who'd only been on one plane in his life going from Waco to Odessa, Texas, while I was in junior college, I'm gallivanting around two countries, and it's like I might as well have been in space. I'd only ever been out of Texas to go to Biloxi, Mississippi to drive to see grandfather every 2 or 3 years. And I was like a kid in a candy store, hockey players. I was younger than a lot of them, same age. They were really good, the original Houston Aeros. They won championships in my 2 years. They lost back-to-back to the Winnipeg Jets with Anders Hedberg and Ulf Nilsson, the first two great Swedes that played, went on to be great with the New York Rangers. And right when I got to where I could pronounce their defenseman, Pekka Ratakallio, the Aeros were folded. And if they had stayed together one more year, we would have had an NHL franchise here. And I was scared to death of turbulence on planes, and because I never had turbulence. But I always looked at Gordie Howe. Gordie sat in an aisle seat. He had these little grainy glasses on the bottom of his nose, did crossword puzzles, and nothing fazed Gordie Howe. So when we hit turbulence, I'd turn around and find Gordie, and he'd be doing those crossword puzzles. And I thought, if Gordie Howe at 46 is not worried about this plane going down, then I'm not either. And then one time we flew from Quebec City to Montreal in a plane that I don't think anybody would get on today. It wasn't left over from World War II. It was left over from World War I. And we had this terrible turbulence. And I'm feeling pretty cocky about it. Team captain next to me, Ted Taylor, said, McLean, only people get scared about dying in a plane crash are ones with families and money in the bank. You don't have a family and you haven't been here long enough to have any money in the bank. And I looked back at Gordy, expected to see him working that crossword puzzle, and his granny glasses were in his lap. He was squeezing the armrest so hard, I thought they were going to break. I saw him cross himself, and I looked back at Ted Taylor. I said, this plane is going down.
Sounds like the plane in Major White League, Knuckler. Where they got their tape on the propellers before takeoff.
Is this our plane? No, this is yours over here.
Oh, my goodness. Rusty Harden. You know, we were talking about this earlier. I watched.
Now, this is one thing I do remember talking with John with a lot.
For sure.
The Roger Clemens situation.
Absolutely.
The misremembered.
He is front and center again, and I watched the piece on Real Sports on HBO in the latest, and, of course, it's got the first story is the Deshaun Watson case. I think now 24 is the number, or it's headed that way, and Rusty Harden is the one in his group representing Deshaun Watson. And that's exactly what I was going to say, what Willie just brought up. You certainly have a track record with Rusty Harden in Houston.
Rusty Harden and Tony Busby represents 23 plaintiffs, soon to be 24 if you believe Busby. They're two of the most high-profile attorneys in the country. They've represented big-time people. They're both filthy rich, and they're both really good at what they do. Now, Tony Busby is an out-front guy. He knows how to use social media. If you think back to when this first came out, if Deshaun Watson had had Rusty Harden at this time, he would have never done what he did. One woman wanted $100,000 to settle this. And instead, Watson went public on Twitter, basically calling her representative an ambulance chaser. And he would never have done that with Harden representing him. So it made Busby mad. And so Busby then puts on every social media platform he has, if you've ever been wronged by Deshaun Watson, contact the Busby Law Firm. And they started lining up. And he said there were some, after interviewing them, that they didn't think the cases were strong enough. And so once he went public, it was only a matter of time before Watson hired Harden, because all the celebrity athletes going back decades hired Rusty Harden, the former prosecutor. And he's had a lot of high-profile clients. And so it's a battle of the heavyweights. And at times it's been, besides Ali and Frazier, it's been like two kids in a sandbox crying and whining at each other. Usually it's Busby will fire the first broadside, and then Harden will retaliate. And it's been amazing watching those two as they've done battle now since March of 2021. And the thing about the Real Sports interview with Soledad O'Brien from Brian Cumbel, Harden couldn't do it at the time, and he asked him to wait, and they couldn't. And so he put on one of his top assistants. And she did it. And so Rusty did an at-length interview with my radio station here, the Texans flagship, yesterday. And so I expect Busby now will retaliate soon on social media. And really, there's nothing new from these guys. Harden and his associates say Watson never did any of this, despite 23 women telling a similar tale. If you read the lawsuits, and I've read the first 22 three times. If you read them, they all tell a similar tale about what Watson wanted and what Watson did. It was always one-on-one. And then things that were interesting in this new one now is that Watson offered all the plaintiffs $100,000 to settle. That was before they had a deal worked out with Miami, before the 2021 trade deadline of November 2nd. It was a 3-1, a 3-5. And Stephen Ross, the owner, decided on Thursday night before the Tuesday deadline, I want these cases settled. Watson would never hear about a settlement once he dug in with Harden, so they scrambled. And they got 18 of the 22 to agree, and the last four said they would not agree to the nondisclosure that said they had to keep quiet because they wanted to tell their stories. And so it fell apart. Both sides announced it on Monday. They just couldn't get it done. Then he went on the back burner. And then when the new league year began in March, it all was back on the front burner again. And so they're not going to try any of these cases in the season, so that means it'd be next off season, and you're not going to do 23 or 24 in one off season. It could drag on for years. And you know, guys, when he got that $230 million guaranteed, the price of the settlement went up. Now, he swears he's not going to settle, and Busby swears the plaintiffs aren't going to settle. I still believe they'll settle. And think about this. If you're dumb enough to give a player an unprecedented $230 million guaranteed, wouldn't you want some kind of guarantee that it would be done before training camp? Because the Browns don't want this to be a constant distraction, but that's what it's going to be. And that's not just after he learns how long he's going to be suspended. It will pick right up when he returns.
What do you think that number's going to be? Your best guess.
Nobody has any idea, yeah. Aaron. I've thought all along 6 to 8, and somebody tweeted last week, and I can't remember who it was, that thought it's going to be more severe than people have been predicting. Don't know if that means a season. There's speculation. Trevor Bauer's 2-year suspension, which could be longer, that Roger Goodell and his people will pay attention to that. All I know is every time they suspend somebody, they do take into account public sentiment. And right now, the public sentiment, because of all the media coverage, seems to fall on the side of the plaintiffs. But Watson is still innocent until proven guilty. But until they get it settled, every time he does something, it'll be like quarterback Deshaun Watson, comma, the subject of 24 civil lawsuits accusing him of sexual assault and misconduct, comma, threw 3 touchdown passes and ran for 2. It's always going to be part of him. And his, you know, his reputation has been stained, and he knows it. And it, the thing that's so strange about it, nobody here that I know of had any kind of inkling about any of this. He had kept it on the down low, which is 2 of them. Now, maybe he told some teammates, but I never heard of anything like that because up until this, his reputation was impeccable.
Willie would like to redirect after the break. Can you wait a couple minutes?
Of course I can.
All right, more with John McClain on the other side here on the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase. The suit will join us at noon. He's got a lot of duties here. The NCAA baseball regionals are underway, including over at Auburn. Florida State and UCLA are underway. And we'll keep you up to date on the scoreboard. And of course, the Knoxville regional is also underway. Campbell and Georgia Tech. And we'll let you know who wins that one, because Tennessee presumably would play the winner if they're able to beat the 4 seed tonight, which they should. John McClain is with us. So, John, I just have one more question on the Deshaun Watson thing before we move on, because it's such a fascinating part of this to me from the Real Sports thing. And Sports Illustrated, I think to their credit, was the first to really delve into some of the details here on the pattern of behavior that you referred to. So my question is for Roger Goodell, even if there is no criminal charges, which they're not, regardless of how the civil suits come out, there's such a clear pattern that would appear to be inappropriate at best right? And you have this personal conduct policy. But I think I saw this, John, and maybe you can confirm it. He had like over 100 different massage therapists involved in this, right?
Well, nobody knows that, Willie. All we know is from reading all the stories in the Houston Chronicle that we had from the get-go, and plus everything I could get my hands on and knowing what I did and don't know, there were 22 who came forward and filed civil suits. Two talked to Sports Illustrated but did not become part of that group. And then Rusty Harden produced 18 who said he was a perfect gentleman. And now there's supposed 23, so 23, 33, 43, 41. If the 24th suited, that would be 42. Then the two with that size, 44. That's all we know for sure. And Watson had said in his Cleveland News Conference over a five-year period. No, it was over a two-year period, all this. Now, if it was over a five-year period, then that means there were three other seasons nobody knows anything about. And one of the things that's the most interesting about it is for whatever reason, Watson got bad advice, and I can't believe this would come from Rusty Harden, because Rusty knows if you reach settlements, then everybody moves on. And Rusty Harden, who gets paid in the millions, no telling what he's made off Watson, and for whatever reason, he wouldn't settle, wouldn't hear of it. And until the last minute when he had a chance to go to Miami, and the only place he agreed to go to was Miami. And we don't think it was anything about the Dolphins. We think it's because he wanted to go to South Florida, like so many athletes want to do, where they can live on the water, have boats, and kind of disappear with a lot of famous people. So nobody knows for sure, but we'd be naive or just downright stupid if we thought there were not others who have not come forward because either they did reach settlement or they didn't want their names out, because the ones who have come forward, their names have been made public. They say they've received death threats from Watson's fans and raked over the coals. And when they've gone public, everything that was on Real Sports, we've seen them 100 times in Houston. Hmm.
So there was there was nothing new in that report that you guys had
absolutely
not seen.
Yeah. No, that was all in the lawsuits and things that had been covered thoroughly here. But because it went national, and especially the people in Ohio and Northeast Ohio, but the Browns knew all this. The Browns don't care if there's 10 or 20 more who come forward. You know, they know at some point it's going to be over. It's going to be behind him, and he'd be a great quarterback like he was his last season here in 2020, when the Texans were 4-12, and he didn't have DeAndre Hopkins, he didn't have Will Fuller for five games, Randall Cobb for six, and yet whoever they threw out there, he played great.
We had a debate over the last week. Now that June 1st has come and gone, and the Titans have a little extra money that they get back from the Julio Jones cut that they pigeonholed for this date, do they need another wide receiver who's a free agent? The pickings are kind of meager right now, but the one intriguing name is Will Fuller. Give us your perspective. You've watched him up close for a long time. Do you think he would be worth a flyer at the right price?
No, unless he paid you. The problem with Will, he's never played a season. And his best season, which was the last year of his contract in 2020, and I'm always very suspicious of guys who only stay healthy in the last year of their contract, he was playing great. He was Watson's best deep threat. And then he got substance abuse violation, cost him last five games of the first game last season. He only played with four with Miami. Down here, we believe that he'll go to Cleveland for whatever he's going to get to be reunited with Watson. We think he went to Miami because Watson told him, hey, I'm coming to Miami. They're very tight. But no, Will Fuller cannot be counted on health-wise. Mike Vrabel knows that. John Robinson knows that. If he could be counted on health-wise, he wouldn't be a free agent, because he's a good guy. He's loaded with talent. He's fast. He dropped a lot of passes early. He got over it, but he's just always hurt. And they're legitimate injuries. He's not one of those guys, I like to say, who gets shampoo in his eyes and has to go on the go on injured reserve. You know, he plays it, but he just is injury prone. And just about every team will be adding players before training camp. And I believe the Titans will too. But that, of course, you guys would know better than I about what position that would be.
You've seen a lot of cycles and trends in the salary cap covering the league. Right now, the trend, of course, is wide receivers are really pushing and getting big, big contracts. We saw it all come to a it all came to a head with the A.J. Brown situation. Why do you think that is? And is this smart? Or were the Titans maybe smart to stay away from the change of the market, so to speak?
I believe if the Titans had a quarterback on his rookie contract, A.J. Brown would still be there. But when you got a guy with a cap figure like Tannehill, you have to make tough decisions. You know it killed him to let him go. I know the second happiest team in the league besides the Eagles was the Texans, because Brown had just killed them, and they know it. And so they're happy to see him not only leave the Titans, but leave the conference and go to the Eagles, although they're going to have to play against him this year. And only time will tell. I'll say this. I saw those stats about what the Packers were without Devontae Adams, and it was amazing. They looked like 7-0 or 7-1 and averaged 31 points a game. And it's, to me, it's the quarterback. And I know it's a blow to the Titans to lose him, but if Derrick Henry stays healthy, they're still going to be good, still the best team in the division. And I'm not one of those that says Matt Ryan's going to make the Colts the division champion. They said that last year when they had Carson Wentz, said it when they had Phillip Rivers, and that hadn't been true since they had Andrew Luck.
I thought that was very intriguing, the Matt Ryan thing. The other thing that just happened the other day, John, I'd love to get your take on, is John Fox getting called up by Frank Reich and saying, will you come join our defense? And he jumps in there. What kind of impact do you think he could have?
They already had a good defense. They got talent on that side of the ball. Because they run the ball so well, they ought to be in games. It's amazing, this division. And the Texans have been last in rushing last year, 31st the year before, with their new coach, Lovie Smith, and Pep Hamilton promoted to offensive coordinator. They'll put a big emphasis on running the ball, not like the Colts and the Titans, of course, but a lot. And I think the Jaguars, you know, this is almost like a throwback division. And so if you're going to run the ball, you got to stop the run. John's a great defensive coach. He was a pretty good head coach, but I think you can't have too many good coaches, and especially if they get along.
Last thing, why have there been crickets since the Raiders worked out Kaepernick?
I think the Raiders knew when they brought him in for a workout that it's going to get all kind of attention, as it always does. And then there's a big segment of the fan base wants you to sign him. And whoever signs him, if your starter has a big game, there's going to be a big segment of the fan base, especially nationally, that's going to demand that he start. And so I'm guessing they just did their due diligence. People wondered, well, are other teams going to work him out? Well, they're not going to do it because the Raiders did it. They'll do it if they want to see what he looks like. Teams work out players all the time. But, man, if you work out Colin Kaepernick, you better be ready. Josh McDaniels wouldn't comment on it. And, of course, all the reports was he had a good workout. Well, how the hell do you have a bad workout? You know, what happens? You know, everything is tailor-made, just like a pro day. They orchestrate that like they practice it like a Broadway play. You rehearse it over and over and over. It's hard for a quarterback to have a bad pro day. Now, will we see Kaepernick get signed after all these years of inactivity? You know, I think he should have gone to the USFL and played in one of those leagues, got good tape, and I think that would have helped him.
Interesting stuff. John, good to catch up with you again, as always. Looking forward to you being a part of our family, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you down the road.
My first appearance will be June 13th on 94.9 The Fan. I'm on every Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Thank you, guys, as always.
Awesome.
Willie, Darren, it's always great hearing from you guys. And anytime you need me, just let me know.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you, guys.
John McClain. Tuesday,
the one and only.
June 13th, 3 o'clock. That'll be his first appearance. There you go. You just heard it. 94.9. the fan. We'll come back.
He brought up something on Kaepernick that I think is interesting, and I brought it up to you about Malik Willis, and let's pick that up on the other side.
All right, let's do that on the other side here on the DDC. You just made the list. Time coming up at high noon. Got tickets to give away to Send Amphitheater, that show we've been talking about all week. Even Dan Patrick endorsed it yesterday. He did.
Dan Patrick was fun.
Jewel, Blues Traveler, Train, he endorsed it.
Darren, some early scores from down at Auburn. Florida State 1, UCLA nothing in the top of the second. And from Knoxville, Campbell 2, Georgia Tech nothing in the top of the second. Georgia Tech did not start Marquise Grissom Jr., who statistically is their best pitcher, even though they have a kind of a rough pitching staff. They're score a lot, give up a lot. But Campbell, the Fighting Campbells, sponsored by Elijah Campbell, and they have just gone deep for another shot. It is now 4-0 Campbell in the second inning. So Georgia Tech getting burned by not starting their best pitcher.
Whoops. This is true. And Campbell did, so.
Yeah. Elijah Campbell is a fan of the Campbells. He has worn the shirt.
It's a birthright. Yeah. Cheering for that team is a birthright that I have and I have only on this show.
They've already hit 2 homers, and yes, the ball is flying out of Lindsey Nelson Stadium, as it customarily does.
Georgia Tech went with Medich instead of Grissom Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Campbell went with Harrington, which I did not know was
there. And Harrington is the potential first-round pick. Is that what Vince
said? Yeah, well, that's what he said. I was going to say, I didn't know
he was that big of a prospect, but you know, that's what is the beauty of baseball, really all sports, but especially baseball, is if you look, there are plenty of guys who came through the SEC, tried and true, and went right on to be in the top picks, but there's always some guys, and by the way, Campbell has just hit another monstrous home run. It's 5-0. Third homer of the inning for the Camels. But there's a lot of guys from schools like Campbell or Canisius. I just looked at yesterday, the best pitcher on the Detroit Tigers went to the University of Seattle. It was his only Division I offer that he got. So there are guys that develop at different times, especially on the mound. So that's why we love the game. I mean, these are tape measure shots that Campbell's hitting right now. Holy cow. The Yellow Jackets have been knocked to the canvas in the second inning.
I really want to see Tennessee and Georgia Tech. I want to see how many home runs they can hit.
Well, Georgia Tech needs to maybe just get the third out in the second inning.
All right, let's talk about what John said.
It's a really interesting thing that I have thought of, and I brought it up to you last week, Darren. Malik Willis is a unique situation, right? Rookie quarterback who has gone through the college ranks as a spread type of quarterback but has NFL tools. So what does he need? He needs reps. And so could you make the argument, even though right now there's not an agreement between the two leagues, that at least a 4 or 5 game stint in the USFL would benefit him? Let's leave that argument aside right now. But John brought up a point about Colin Kaepernick. He's so far removed now from playing any live football that really a workout is not going to give anybody, good or bad, the true impression of what you'd like to see. So if he's not convincing people with that, or his, you know, for example, his workout at the Michigan spring football game, you know, a favor from John Harbaugh, hey, we'll put you in front of a lot of people here. If that doesn't convince anybody, then why not jump in on a USFL team and dominate the league to where you can say, look at what I've done. Remember Tommy Maddox in the old XFL was the MVP of that league, and it gave him a huge leg up to get back in the NFL. So it's just something that I've thought about, and that's the one thing that I'm a little surprised at with Kaepernick, that he's never really put himself out there in another league. There's been, through these years, opportunities here and there. There have been failed leagues, like the one that, you know, folded up the tents in the middle of the league. What was it, the American whatever?
AAC.
The sure. AAC. I'm just thinking somewhere in there, and I've never heard an explanation, really, from his camp. He hasn't really talked that much, right? Nope. Richard Deitch has a really interesting podcast interviewing I can't remember the name of the guests he had, but they batted this around, you know, from a PR standpoint, from a how he's handled it standpoint, just going back through the entire process here in light of the Raiders tryout. And that is the one thing that he hasn't really done. He hasn't spoken much, and he hasn't ever put himself out there to say, look, I can still play in this league. Look at what I did in this league here, whether it be the American League or right now, if he still is serious about getting in, why not the USFL?
I don't know. I've always wondered the same thing. I mean, and he's really never made – that stuff has been out there with all these leagues, CFL, everything.
Yeah, the CFL really had to stop in the pandemic, but prior to that, there were still some seasons in there where that would have been something, you know?
Didn't he sign a big endorsement deal, though?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, he made millions off an endorsement deal. So maybe that's his reasoning. Why do I need to go play for these leagues for whatever they're willing to pay?
Well, it wouldn't be about money. I think it would be about the, you know, just trying to show. Just like a player, like, for example, we just saw this today. Robinson Cano just got sent to the minor leagues, right? Maybe somebody will call him and say, join us up for our – this has already happened. The Mets released him. The Padres picked him up. He went 3-for-33. They sent him to the minors. He won't go to the minors. But the phone's going to stop ringing, so he's going to have to go to some league and prove that he can still play if he wants to still try to play.
I don't think he does. He doesn't care.
Robinson Cano?
He's made his money.
But see, that's what I don't know about Colin Kaepernick. Is he really serious? Because the older you get, the more you have to maybe prove yourself at 34 as opposed to when you were 27, 28,
maybe.
29.
And he's, oh, by the way, hasn't played in 6 years?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years, whatever it is. I mean,
there was a time where I thought it was pretty ridiculous that nobody was calling to say, would you like to come be our backup or try out to be our backup? I even said it about the Titans when they had Marcus Mariota as their starter, and the backup was Matt Cassel. Mm-hmm. As much as I loved the makeup of Matt Cassel, it was clear that Matt Cassel was not the player he had been. He was there for intangibles. He was there as a stopgap at best. You could definitely argue that Kaepernick, from a talent standpoint, was a better match, an upgrade. But it looked to me like at that time, the Titans didn't want to deal with what they perceived to be a circus. And this is what Richard Deitch discussed with his guest on his podcast, that the media circus would have been, at least initially, a big, big thing, even if you brought him in as the backup. And that was the argument you heard. Well, is it really worth him to be the backup when there's going to be so much focus on him when he really, you hope he doesn't even have to play, right, if he's going to be your backup? But that, it's just an interesting thing how the stages have gone through this whole process since the initial thing. Where he sat out with the anthem. There was that huge firestorm. There was a lot of people said the ratings will never be the same for the NFL. They've lost a huge chunk of their audience. Well, not so much.
Would that be a freezing cold take?
That might be a freezing cold take.
Possibly, yeah. I don't know. I mean, as you said at the beginning of this, he doesn't really talk.
And at some point, you got to prove you can play, even if you go
really
somewhere you don't really want to go.
His mindset. What is he looking to accomplish? What does he really want to do? I mean, is he really? I don't know. I have no idea. It sounds like nobody else does either. So I don't know.
And apparently, he's done a lot of really good things following up on some of the causes he's tried to advance with the relationship with Nike, and that's great for him. But if he really wants to still play,
right.
It's not going to be handed to him. He might have to go the uncomfortable route of having to prove yourself in the minors.
But basically. Hasn't that ship sailed? I mean,
well, how do you know? Like, I don't know if did he call the U.S. Certainly, the USFL would stand to gain huge. Would there not be a lot of curiosity if he signs with Jeff Fisher in the Michigan Panthers?
They would line up
just like we said with Malik Willis.
Yep.
The intrigue of having a prospect or a guy like Kaepernick—that's got to be music to their ears. Geez, we need all the eyeballs we can get here for this league to make it.
There would be a battle for his services.
Yeah.
But because the attention that it would draw, the league would love it because, you know, everything he did, it would be national news. I mean, every game, every play, the highlights. I mean, the USFL would certainly be on everybody's radar. I don't know. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish. I don't know why he would feel that would not help him. I mean, it's very clear these workouts are not changing. It's not nothing.
It's not moving the needle.
Right,
it doesn't look like
it's not doing anything. It moves the needle for the initial workout, and that's it. And then it just goes away. It evaporates quickly. So I have no idea. And I kind of feel like every I don't even want to say a year. I mean, every month, every whatever time frame you want to use that goes by, is it really realistic anymore to think that he's actually going to play? I don't think so. I never even – by the way, if you looked at the Raiders roster, did you really think that was even? I mean, did they trade for Stidham? They traded for him.
Well,
look who the coach is. Don't you think Stidham would have the upper hand on being the backup?
There's such a need for quarterbacks. It's not unrealistic to think you wouldn't have a chance to go compare. No, but I'm talking about just going, signing him to come into camp. You know, not guaranteeing any money or anything like that, but come to camp and try out. Just like Trevor Siemian and who are some of the other guys the Titans have brought in? Who was the guy from Notre Dame? Kinzer, right?
Don't you feel like those opportunities have been there?
Kizer. Yeah. DeShone Kizer. They brought in a lot of has-beens or, you know.
Never was.
There's always that guy in camp.
Yeah.
Like, there's no harm in bringing in Kaepernick to try out, even if he can't play. But if you're not getting that, then how about the USFL?
It just doesn't feel like he really wants to play. I just think he wants.
But see,
that feels like he just wants somebody to sign him.
And we don't talk really, and come out and say, "I desperately want to play. I'll take anything. Give me a tryout. I'll go. I'll be the fourth guy in camp. I'll just show you that I can play." That's the one thing he hasn't ever really done throughout this whole journey.
That vibe doesn't seem to be there.
Nope.
Gwen on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, says that she changed her work schedule so she could be at her desk to hear John. Again, it was well worth it. He is so entertaining and informative to listen to. Thanks for having him on. Gwen, thanks for listening. Thanks for changing your schedule to hear John.
Okay.
We enjoy him, too. Hopefully, there'll be some news down the road about maybe some more visits from Uncle John on our show. But stay tuned for that. Back to wrap up the second hour next. You just made the list coming up at high noon. You're going to have to participate. Call in on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. I think the suit.
Oh, the suit.
Is going to make an appearance. I think he's going to hang out, actually. Not even just make an appearance. He's going to hang out with us.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Must be done with his free lunches and meetings for the day, I guess. Nate on our text line says, I don't know that Kaepernick thinks he should have to go to the USFL to prove himself. He thinks he's done enough for a team to take him, which is obviously not true. So if he does think that way, then I don't really understand why he thinks that way, because as Nate just said in the text, that's just not true, or he would have played by now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me the backup quarterback situations. Again, we had this conversation going back to many years ago. What is his mindset? Because, right, we always have to ask with starter, not in a starter anymore, what's their mindset? Are they willing to accept a backup role, or are they going to be hell-bent on, I'm a starter, you're going to take me as a starter,
He's living in a fantasy world. I think there was a time where he did think, perhaps, and again, we didn't hear a lot of public comments from him at the time, but I think there might have been a feeling of, look, this is ridiculous that nobody's calling me to compete as a starter. I don't want to be a backup. He never really clarified that.
Yep.
But now, this is a time warp.
I'm saying through the layers of this, that may have been for a while.
Yeah.
And now he's in the camp of, well, I'm not going to the USFL. Like, I'm not going to do that.
But see if the phone rings.
Or I'm not going to go to these little, you know, leagues that are going to last for a couple months and go away. I mean, it's clear that that's probably been his mindset, because why else would you not? Unless maybe he doesn't want to risk getting hurt in those leagues. I don't know. And maybe he thinks that would hurt his chance. I don't know. Again, he's not saying much.
Not playing hasn't really helped. So I'm just saying other options should be considered here. All right, now I have a question for you, Darren. This was a good podcast I heard that I would recommend. Bill Simmons, you know who Bill Simmons is. They have a movie podcast.
He made fun of me in one of his...
He made fun of you?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember this. What happened?
You don't remember this? This is back
Remind me.
So what did he call what he did, the Bills? I can't remember the exact.
He's had a lot of different things
go
that he's
back,
done.
Go back. I think this is like probably
when he wrote for
15
the,
years ago. This is for ESPN.com.
Yeah. And he had –
what was it called? Bill Simmons.
He had a different – what was the
Grantland,
website?
Was it?
Grantland. He started Grantland, which was an offshoot on ESPN. He had a partnership with them. He actually was doing coverage of the NBA Finals. He was on their main panel for a while. He's an interesting author. He's a unique character. Now his big thing is podcasts.
Yeah.
He has what's called the BS podcast, but he's in a number of them. And one of them he does is the Rewatchables, where they pick a movie – which is a great movie that's rewatchable. Like, it comes on TV, and you're willing to rewatch it just because you love the movie. Some of them are, like, Academy Award winners. Others are just kind of fun movies. They've done hundreds of them, and they just have these categories. They go back through them. It's kind of a fun discussion. I enjoy it. But I don't remember when he slammed you personally.
Oh, well, he didn't call me by it, but he did. He, you know, radio host in Nashville. He laid all the breadcrumbs out there for everybody to figure out. It was me.
What was the subject?
Well, if you remember, one year at the Super Bowl on Radio Row, this is like, again, this was back, Bill Simmons had not blown up.
Okay.
He was gaining popularity. He was getting pretty big, but it was not at the height or, remember, I think this was, I want to say this was 15 years ago, 07, Glendale, Arizona. I think that was Patriots-Giants Super Bowl. So he's making his rounds, and what he was doing in making his rounds is he wanted to sit down. He was going to all the tables, or as many tables as possible, and he was going to write about the interviews.
About the process of going through the car wash.
Yes, through the car wash of the interviews.
Okay.
And, of course, he ended up at our table.
Okay.
And I don't remember how he brought up, he was saying Boston or whatever, and I think I said something like, so I guess you're a – because he kept just talking about Boston, and I said, so I guess you're a Celtics fan too, or a Patriot, something to that effect. And he was like, yeah, clearly he doesn't know me. He doesn't read my stuff. Because it's pretty clear that I'm a over-the-top,
crazed Boston guy.
Boston guy. So clearly the guy from Nashville doesn't read my stuff. But, you know,
whoops,
it's fine.
Hey,
it was true. At the time, it was true.
You got to keep people's feet on the ground sometimes, right? So, you've never heard of me? How could that be? That's funny.
So I think we had a little fun at that, at my expense.
Okay, so here's the question from his recent podcast. I'll throw it to you, maybe to the listeners. We've all had conversations about sequels, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you would call this Maverick thing that we're talking about.
It is.
Kind of a sequel?
Yeah, I think it is.
Kind of it is, even though it's like 30 years later or whatever it is, 35, 1986, I think is when it came out, the original Top Gun.
Yep.
But this one goes one step further. What is the best part three? Like, there's some bad sequels. There's also some decent sequels that lead to a third, and the third is awful. One of the examples he uses, and I agree 100%, like Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Bad.
It's unwatchable.
Bad.
Like, not even good bad. Like, sometimes you're like, oh, this is so bad, it's actually fun. Like, there are some third parts that you can't even get through. It's like, this is so awful. I challenge you to watch this whole thing from start to finish. You can't do it. But what's the best?
I'm just going to go.
Part three.
Just
you can think about it if you want.
Well, I'm just going to throw a couple out there, and I may be wrong. But just, if you ask me on the spot, I would say Rocky III.
That was his argument. Now, so Rocky III, they just did a podcast on Rocky III, and that's the claim that they make.
As it went along, then it started getting, like, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm,
Rocky IV was still pretty good.
Yeah, but then after that, I think, is when it started going downhill. The other one that comes to mind, a little surprise here, Friday the 13th, part three. I think that was 3D.
And yes, it was.
And I was all in on that. So. But
yes,
then,
it was.
Then it was like, I lost. Did they get to 13? Like, I lost count.
That was the goal, I think. Yeah. Four was pretty good.
But again, I think four is the number.
Once you get past four, it starts going down.
There's been so many remakes of it that, like you're saying, L3 was good. I can't remember which one three is.
I think it was 3D at the time. It was 3D, and it was legit. It was good. I saw it. It was still scary, you know, and it was good.
Okay.
But I think four was even good. And then I think after that, it was like, I think I bounced. I started. I think I watched five, and I was like, okay, I think I'm done with the Friday the 13th. How many more
There's
things can you do with Jason?
That are hilariously bad.
Yeah, yeah. So
that, and then that you get into this, is it so bad it's good? Then that's a risky game to play too. But so Rocky III was his argument. I have a hard time saying he's wrong.
I'm going to go with Friday the 13th and Rocky III.
Like Return of the Jedi is good, but I might go Rocky III. Like Rocky III arguably is better than Rocky II. In some, so that's just something to ponder. Are there part threes that you would say are the best? And then you can even add a part three that is just horrendous, and there's plenty of those.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. Start the third hour, part three of the show with You Just Made the List. That's next.